Welcome to People Power and Politics, hard talk, riveting interviews, community updates, in-depth analysis. That's People Power and Politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our show, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.
A very warm welcome to everyone. We are joined by a very special guest, Congresswoman Yvette Clark, who represents the 9th District in Brooklyn. Welcome. Such a pleasure to have you, as always.
It's great to be back with you, Pearl, and many blessings to you and your listening audience during this holy holiday season.
Many blessings to you, your family, and team as well.
Thank you.
So today we're going to be talking about immigration reform, Today we're going to be talking about immigration in general. Given your personal connection to the Caribbean community through your Jamaican heritage, how has this shaped your approach to immigration reform, particularly concerning Caribbean nationals?
It has shaped my sort of view to the United States in a very profound way. Being second generation American myself, it's not a large departure to look at those who are seeking to come to our nation for a better life, seeking asylum, safety, and security at all. Because of course, my parents were immigrants to the United States under different circumstances, but understanding that this nation has afforded our family a way of life that my parents would not have had access to had they remained in their home of origin. And so I'm very empathetic to the plight of those who are making their way to our shores for a whole host of different reasons, but to live out their American dream. And I see my role as using my lived experience to help shape the debate and policies of our nation that would not be a nation were it not for immigrants that have come and made the United States their home.
So on the background of what you just said there, can you discuss any specific legislative initiatives that you have supported or introduced aimed at improving the conditions for Black immigrants and their families in Brooklyn and the U.S.?
Well, you know, all of the legislation that we need specifically for sort of immigrants of African descent have really been introduced. A number of measures that I have looked at has been providing temporary protected status, particularly to continental Africans, South Americans, and South and Central Americans and Caribbean, South and Central Americans and Caribbean to come to the United States where they're seeking a better life. And that temporary protected status is for those who came in through our southern border or through other means, but have no status in the United States. Temporary protected status enables these individuals to remain in our country, understanding the various conflicts that are taking place in their home of origin, be it due to climate change, due to narco trafficking, and a whole host of other issues, or discrimination of some form or fashion. Temporary protected status would enable those individuals to come to plead their case to our adjudicatory bodies and enable them in the interim to have access to work permits. And to begin to settle in as part of our civil society. Right now, unfortunately, my party is not in the majority and therefore doesn't have the levers of power to advance legislation. So introducing legislation for a comprehensive immigration reform has already taken place, but will not be taken up under the current construct of the Congress, unfortunately. So we are using every measure that we can, appealing to the Biden administration through letters and through conversation to do what they can to expand their regulatory authority to enable individuals who are seeking asylum, who have migrated to the U.S. To be protected under the Homeland Security's programs of temporary protected status or deferred enforced departure from the United States.
And speaking about asylum and asylum seekers, can you discuss the barriers to asylum with CBP One app?
Well, part of what the Biden administration is trying to do through the use of this app is create a pathway for individuals to seek asylum in the United States through an orderly process that communicates directly with the U.S. and through that communication indicates to those individuals when their appointments are due, so that, you know, they're not taking the perilous trip through the jungles of South and Central America to get here, but would know when approximately their claims can be heard here in the United States. There were several nations that have been given priority through the CBP One app and in the processing of their claims. One of those nations being Haiti, I believe also Ecuador, Venezuela, and I believe there are three other nations specifically. But what we're finding is that, the backlog has been generated as a result of the overwhelming use of the app and the shortage of manpower in the Department of Homeland Security to really process all of the requests that are coming in, as well as manage those who are presenting themselves but have not utilized the app in order to present themselves here in the United States. The immigration process here in the United States is broken. There's no getting around it. And what we have tried to do was get our colleagues to understand that we must not only do comprehensive immigration reform, but we must provide funding to the Department of Homeland Security to deal with, you know, the overwhelming numbers of people who are presenting themselves on our southern border and through the CBP One app. And that requires funding through our budget process, through our appropriations process, so that the agency can expand its manpower to meet the moment and meet the need.
So, Ms. Clark, you mentioned that the immigration system is currently broken. How do you think it has impacted Caribbean nationals, especially those from Jamaica and Haiti, because they have the largest populations here in New York?
Well, what we have found is that family reunification is taking far too long as a result of the waiting list that have been generated over decades now for individuals to reunite with families. One of the hallmarks of our immigration system in the U.S. has been family reunification. And depending on the category of those who are applying for visas to the United States, these waiting queues can be decades long. And what I've said to my colleagues is that typically individuals are at the sort of height of their productivity in terms of their youthfulness and their age when they're applying to come to the U.S. So, you know, when someone who is in their early 20s has to wait, you know, for 2 decades, 20 years before they even get an appointment, they're now 40 years of age. And so, you know, their most productive years are beginning to wane. And that's why we need to have our system change to address our workforce needs in the United States, those who are seeking economic opportunities in the United States, those who are seeking educational opportunities in the United States. But we are up against individuals who are currently in the majority, particularly in the House of Representatives, that have presented all manner of xenophobia and racism as a means of obstructing the sort of modernization of our immigration system to meet 21st century needs and to address what has been a long-standing hallmark of our immigration system, which is family reunification.
So as the congressional representative, you know, with a high percentage of Caribbean immigrants, and given some of the challenges that you just mentioned, how do you propose to or are enhancing the support systems for Caribbean immigrants to ensure they have the access to the necessary resources and services in your district and Brooklyn at large?
Yes, that's a great question, Pearl. Luckily, we do have partners on the ground who are being funded through city and state resources to meet the needs of the immigrant population here in the city of New York and in the 9th Congressional District of New York. You know, we try to help people adjust their status who are eligible. And so one of our major constituent services here in our offices is immigration. And we do everything from encouraging people who are residents of the United States and have lived here for over 5 years to get their citizenship so that family reunification becomes there's another avenue, because that now you're dealing with citizens who are filing for their loved ones versus people who are here with a green card. And looking at other avenues that can help those who are here under varying circumstances to adjust their status. So, you know, that's the role that we play. And like I said, luckily, we have partners within the constituency who are funding nonprofit organizations that do provide a lifeline, if you will, to many of those who are undocumented and are just seeking relief in a myriad of ways in order to live out their American dream.
So let's go back to your Jamaican roots, Ms. Clark. There is a high percentage of Jamaican nationals working in the U.S. hotel industry, the hospitality industry, and other sectors, and they have faced some challenges in recent times. Can you talk about what measures do you believe are necessary to address some of these challenges?
Yes, absolutely. First of all, you know, we need to make sure that these workers, essential workers, are not suffering in isolation and in silence. And what we have been working with are advocacy organizations that have stepped up into the breach to give voice to those who may be exploited due to their lack of status, or being in between status, being temporarily given status, whether it's TPS or it's DACA, so that, you know, one, they know that they're not alone, but two, you know, we can look at ways in which we hold employers accountable for human rights violations, wage theft, and things of that nature. And that's where, again, in many cases, our state partners have played a critical role, including our attorney general, who's done a lot of work around wage theft.
So looking at our Haitian brothers and sisters, we know about the escalating crisis in Haiti, which has exacerbated the migration of Haitians. What kind of humanitarian response do you think is necessary from the international community and the United States in particular?
Yeah, we need a massive response right now. You know, there's no doubt that the Haitian people, Haitian nationals in Haiti, are going through some of the most horrific times in terms of their civil society that they've seen in close to a generation. And, you know, without a viable government in place, we have seen sort of gangs take up and fill that void and essentially terrorizing the population. So it is critical that the United States, that we use our leverage as one of the major funding partners of humanitarian aid to Haiti to impress upon our sort of allies, Haiti's allies, to step up and to provide their support financially and otherwise to bring stability, safety, security, and humanitarian aid in the midst of this crisis. We know and reports are that the gangs will commandeer trucks and supplies that are going into Haiti, that there's a lot of exploitation of the people, that there's gender-based violence taking place on a regular, hourly, daily basis. And, you know, it is important that we leverage our sort of our prominence as a nation with the UN to build out a strong coalition that will do a number of things. One, amp up their commitment and deployment of humanitarian aid to Haiti in this moment, as well as work with the Haitian people to establish its transitional presidential council, which will then trigger the deployment of a security force led by Kenya and partnering with CARICOM, Benin, and a few other nations to work with the Haitian National Police to bring safety and security, stability back to the country. And that we're in this for the long haul, and we have to impress upon you know, the Haitian people, as well as our partners globally, how important it is to address this crisis as we speak.
So thank you so much, Congresswoman Yvette Clark, for being a strong voice and advocate for Caribbean and Black immigrants. One love and continued blessings.
Thank you so much, Pearl. And again, many blessings during this holy holiday season. And as my mother would say, one love, bless up, and walk good.
Thank you so much.
People Power and Politics, Hard Talk, Riveting Interviews, Community Updates, In-Depth Analysis, That's People Power in Politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our show, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.